T-Biz Podcast delivers tea news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Each year, the T-Biz portal publishes the State of the Tea Industry Forecast, a forward-looking assessment of production, pricing, trade, and demand. We invite tea professionals across the value chain to review the findings and contribute their perspective. Your insights help refine the forecast before it is finalized on March 1st.
Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. Fertilizer shortages threaten tea quality and output. It's International Tea Day next week, and India enforces a controversial tea auction mandate. Plus, tea growers have spent decades optimizing for yield, but what if the future value of tea depends on something very different? Healthier soils, deeper roots, and a much longer time horizon. In this week's Spotlight Conversation, Michael Hamm of Wild Orchard Regenerative Tea joins us to explore what regenerative agriculture means in practice for tea farming, from soil health and biodiversity to the operational realities estates face as they transition from conventional production systems. Stay tuned. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia tea estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
Nitrogen fertilizer prices have surged sharply in recent weeks as instability around the Strait of Hormuz disrupts one of the world's most critical commodity corridors. Gulf nations, including Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Oman, and the UAE, are among the world's largest urea exporters. Much of that urea moves through the strait. For tea-producing countries, the implications are immediate. Tea is highly dependent on nitrogen. Unlike seasonal crops, which are harvested once or twice a year, tea bushes require continuous nutrient application to sustain plucking cycles and maintain yields. When fertilizer becomes expensive or shipments are delayed, growers reduce application rates, leading to lower yields and poorer quality several months later. Commodity analysts report that benchmark fertilizer prices have doubled in some markets since tensions escalated in the Gulf. The impact is already spreading across tea regions. In East Africa, Kenya and Uganda reportedly source about 35% of their fertilizer imports from Gulf suppliers. Malawi's dependence exceeds 60% in some categories. Rwanda also relies heavily on imported fertilizer transported through Gulf Link logistics systems. This matters because East African tea factories operate on tight cash cycles. Delayed fertilizer shipments, higher freight costs, or weaker local currencies quickly squeeze growers and factories alike. Asia faces similar pressure. India's agriculture sector is already under stress from fertilizer imports and instability in the Middle East trade, according to the Economic Times. Analysts at Observer Research Foundation warn that India's dependence on fertilizer leaves agriculture extremely exposed to Gulf instability. Sri Lanka may be especially vulnerable. The country is still recovering from the fertilizer crisis triggered by the 2021 chemical fertilizer ban. Tea production has stabilized, but many smallholders remain financially vulnerable. Another sustained fertilizer spike could reduce application rates during key growing periods, threatening both volume and quality. This is where the tea trade needs to pay close attention. The problem is not simply higher costs. The greater risk is uneven production stress across regions. Large estates and governments may temporarily absorb some of the shock, but smallholders usually cannot. reduced fertilizer use today means weaker output later in the year. The tea market may not yet be pricing in that delayed effect. For tea buyers, importers, and blenders, the next several months will be critical. Watch fertilizer allocation programs, monitor green leaf intake at factories, and track when smallholders begin cutting nutrient application. The tea industry has spent years optimizing for low-cost sourcing and just-in-time logistics. Armillas is exposing how fragile that market can become when agriculture itself loses access to critical inputs. While the world anxiously awaits oil tankers moving through Hormuz, tea producers watch fertilizer shipments. Business Insight. Global food analysts increasingly warn of a broader food security emergency as fertilizer shortages reduce crop yields worldwide. Tea-producing nations are particularly vulnerable because tea competes with staple crops such as corn, wheat, and rice for the same nitrogen inputs. This creates a difficult economic hierarchy during periods of scarcity. Governments facing rising food inflation and hunger risks are likely to prioritize staple crops over export crops. For tea-producing countries already grappling with currency weakness and constrained foreign exchange, fertilizer allocation may become increasingly political. Smallholders who produce much of the world's tea are typically the first to reduce application rates when prices surge. The result may not be apparent at auction. However, weaker flushes, lower quality, and tighter supply later this year could be the delayed agricultural consequence of a crisis that began as a maritime conflict in the Gulf. International Tea Day, observed annually by the United Nations, has evolved from a ceremonial observance into a global platform that celebrates tea's cultural heritage and its important role in rural livelihoods. Once again, the centerpiece will be the FAO International Tea Day observance at FAO headquarters in Rome. This high-level gathering brings together policymakers, tea boards, researchers, and sustainability organizations to address critical industry issues, including biodiversity, ethical sourcing, and climate resilience. A primary focus of the discussions will be tea's measurable contributions to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. At the same time, producing countries continue to use International Tea Day as a form of cultural diplomacy. At the United Nations in New York, International Tea Day 2026 highlights tea's growing importance as both a cultural and economic force. The global observance serves as a strategic platform for tea diplomacy, tourism development, and sustainability branding while engaging consumers worldwide. India's permanent mission to the UN is expected to host comprehensive programming in New York City. These sessions will highlight tea's vital role in supporting rural livelihoods and advancing women's employment. One of the year's most ambitious gatherings will take place on Reunion Island in the Indian Ocean, where the International Tea Symposium will be held under the high patronage of Emmanuel Macron, President of France. The symposium offers a unique forum for tea historians, tourism officials, and producers to explore the preservation of tea heritage alongside tourism growth. This event underscores the growing international visibility of tea tourism and its diplomatic potential. Meanwhile, online participation continues to expand through the SOFA Summit, hosted by Shabnam Weber of the Tea and Herbal Association of Canada. This global live-streamed event facilitates direct connections between tea professionals and consumers through expert interviews, guided tea tastings, and wellness discussions spanning multiple tea origins. Throughout the week, a coalition of tea-producing countries, including India, China, Sri Lanka, Kenya, Japan, Indonesia, Nepal, Bangladesh, Vietnam, and Uganda, is expected to host local activations, operating under the themes such as Tea for Better Lives and Farmed with Care. These programs will include tea garden tours, educational campaigns, and initiatives to reinforce the industry's positive social impact. Museums, universities, and cultural organizations are also aligning their programming with UNESCO-recognized tea traditions. These efforts underscore tea's status as an essential element of intangible cultural heritage, not merely a global beverage. At the retail level, tea houses and specialty shops worldwide are responding to the post-pandemic surge in experiential tea culture. Activities such as matcha workshops, traditional Gong Fu tea sessions, and community gatherings are being held to foster deeper consumer engagement with specialty tea. For the global tea industry, International Tea Day is evolving from a symbolic observation into a coordinated week of market development. Visit the Tea Biz blog and podcast for comprehensive schedules, live streams, venues, and links to participate in International Tea Day 2026. India's tea auction dispute has escalated from a regulatory argument into a market access fight. The Tea Board of India has now shut the Jorhat Tea Auction Center, also known as the Jorhat e-Marketplace. The board says the closure in April supports a new pan-India digital auction framework and makes a separate Jorhat model, quote, no longer feasible, end quote. But the timing's explosive. The same regulator is also moving to enforce rules requiring registered tea manufacturers to sell at least 50% of their annual production through public auctions. For dust grades, the pressure is even greater, with industry reports citing a 100% auction sale requirement under the 2024 amendment. That is why producer groups from Assam and West Bengal have appealed directly to Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Their core request is simple: allow sellers to choose their mode of sale, auction, private contract, ex-factory sale, or direct buyer arrangement, based on commercial need. The Modi government has not responded. The Jorhat closure sharpens the contradiction. Assam produces more than half of India's tea, yet with Jorhat closed, growers in Upper Assam must rely heavily on Guwahati for auction access. Jorhat handled about 4 million kilos last year and was geographically closer to many gardens in India's most important tea-producing belt. Why is the government pushing auctions? The official argument is transparency, standardized oversight, and price discovery through licensed public platforms. A centralized digital system also provides regulators with clearer visibility in volumes, buyers, taxation, compliance, and the movement of tea. But growers argue that transparency is no longer unique to auctions. India's GST system, digital invoicing, buyer registration, and traceability tools can verify trade without forcing producers into a single selling channel. Their objection is economic. Auction sales add time, brokerage, warehousing, sampling, cataloging, transport, and finance charges. Industry groups estimate auction-related costs at roughly 10 rupees per kilogram, which is about 5% of the average selling price, and in weak markets, enough to erase net margins. Growers also avoid auctions because auctions expose tea to oversupply-driven price suppression. If too much tea arrives in one channel at once, buyers gain leverage. Direct sales, by contrast, allow producers to negotiate quality, delivery, timing, payment terms, and long-term buyer relationships privately. This is especially important for specialty, orthodox, bought leaf, and value-added producers trying to escape commodity pricing. Business Insight. India is treating auctions as a guarantee of transparency, but producers increasingly see them as a constraint on market freedom. The strategic issue is not whether auctions should exist. They should. The issue is whether auctions should be compulsory. In a digital modern trade environment, the stronger policy is optionality. Transparent auctions for those who need them. Direct sales for those who can build better markets outside them. The Week 19 Tea Price Report for the period ending May 8th is sponsored by the East Africa Tea Trade Association, EATTA, owners of the Mombasa Tea Auction since 1956. Tea markets closed Week 19 with the global tea trade still operating in a disciplined, highly selective pricing environment. Across the major auction centers, buyers remained active but cautious, with quality continuing to determine realization levels more decisively than broad volume demand. In Sri Lanka, stronger competition persisted for cleaner, high-grown, well-manufactured teas, while secondary descriptions continued to encounter resistance. North India maintained a firmer tone overall, particularly for dependable liquoring teas suited to blending and export programs. Mombasa remained orderly rather than aggressive, with buyers concentrating on consistent manufacture and value. Indonesia continued trading with a tighter orthodox focus structure, where smaller catalogs were amplifying quality effects. In Colombo, prices averaged $3.24 per kilo this week, up 3 cents versus the previous week. In North India, prices averaged $1.93 per kilo this week, up by 4 cents per kilo versus the last reported week. In Mombasa, prices averaged $2.23 a kilo, which was unchanged from the previous week, sale 18. In Indonesia, prices averaged $2.43 per kilogram this week, up 2 cents per kilogram versus the prior benchmark, reflecting improved support for orthodox teas and a tighter available supply. The broader market structure remained unchanged. Buyers continued to prioritize execution quality and blend reliability, while exporters remained disciplined because freight, financing, and energy costs continued to support pricing floors across the major origins. The result is a market that remains stable at the headline level, but increasingly differentiated beneath the surface. Premium manufacturers continue to maintain pricing integrity, while secondary teas face wider dispersion and more selective demand. That's the Tea Price Report for Week 19. Subscribe for free to the Tea Briz newsletter on LinkedIn for a detailed regional breakdown, six-month trade signals, and a near-term outlook for quarter two pricing dynamics. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas, and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish, N-I-S-H, at nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
Regenerative agriculture has become one of the tea industry's most discussed concepts. Producers, traders, and brand owners increasingly agree that healthier ecosystems and stronger soils matter. But what does regenerative tea farming look like in practice? Today, we're joined by Michael D. Ham, founder of Wild Orchard Tea on Jeju Island in South Korea. Michael works with regenerative organic tea systems focused on biodiversity, soil microbiology, and long-term ecological stewardship. He is our third guest in the TBS series on Regen Tea. In this conversation, we discuss why regenerative farming may begin by doing less, how root systems influence tea quality, and why the tea industry may need to rethink how it measures success. Michael is a longtime advocate for regenerative agriculture and works closely with growers focused on soil health, biodiversity and long-term ecological stewardship. He is Nutrition Initiative Chair at the Global Wellness Institute, a former director of the Highland Springs Resort in Los Angeles, and a graduate of the University of British Columbia. Michael, it's good to see you. Thanks for joining us on the T-Biz podcast.
Dan, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to introduce regenerative agriculture in tea to people who have never heard of it and to go a little deeper for those who have had an intro.
Michael, what does regenerative tea farming mean in day-to-day practice?
So it's a little too vast to go into all the details, but from our field level, what I can tell you is that it really starts with what we don't do first, right? So no irrigation. All our tea trees are watered by rainfall, so no synthetic inputs, so no shortcuts that trade long-term soil health for short-term yield. And that's kind of like counterintuitive, right? So our trees on Jeju Island were planted from seed 25 years ago into volcanic soil. And so we left them to find their own depth. And so day to day, what this means for us is resisting the urge to intervene. But on our farm, our farmers make it a mandate to let nature lead the land as it was designed. So to make a clear distinction, most conventional tea farming optimizes for harvest and yield. Regenerative farming optimizes for the conditions that make harvest possible decades from now. So it's really a long-term vision.
One of the striking ideas here is that regenerative farming often begins with restraint rather than intervention. No irrigation, minimal disturbance, letting the plants interact naturally with its environment. Why is tea naturally suited to regenerative agriculture?
That's exactly it. And then the key component to all of this is when you allow nature to grow and cultivate the teas, my question to everyone is, logically, don't you think you're going to get a better tasting, better quality tea rather than someone who puts all these synthetic inputs in using petroleum-based fertilizer, like synthetic chemicals? So regenerative agriculture is really about going back to the basics.
What changes are happening below ground in regenerative tea systems?
So tea as a perennial is actually very well suited to regenerative principles. So, for example, the root systems run deep, especially if you plant by seed instead of transplant by cuttings. The taproot is going straight down into the soil. So some of our trees are 30 feet. Imagine 30 feet deep roots, right? Imagine what it's doing, pulling up the minerals and the flavor from the soil. And then there's the, you mentioned it just a little before, but it's the canopy that creates its own microclimate below. And you're not tilling every season. So what translates naturally are things like biodiversity, very important in any ecological context, right? Minimal soil disturbance. So we're not messing with the microbiome. We're allowing it to thrive underneath our feet. And then you have, like I mentioned before, a long-term horizon. So it's not everyone just looking for short-term gain and extracting from the soil. It's really a long-term horizon that benefits everything on the land, including the farmers, right? So, and I would say that the one challenge or the challenge is that the conventional systems were engineered for more uniformity and yield and volume, but regenerative really asks us to welcome variability, like in leaf size, harvest timing, yield. So that's almost like a cultural and operational shift as much as an agronomic one. And I would have to say the toughest stuff that when I speak to other tea farmers is that anyone doing it the conventional way, almost you have to unlearn optimization.
Soil health is frequently described as the foundation of regenerative farming. What changes in soil management or cultivation practices are you experimenting with in these tea gardens?
So for those of you who have heard of or have been to Jeju Island, it's a volcanic island. So the volcanic soil on Jeju Island, it's already mineral rich. So we started with an advantage, and it's one of the reasons why we planted by seed. So the roots would go deep into the soil. And so the practice is to protect the soil rather than like extract from it. So no tilling, no synthetic fertilizers that disrupt the soil microbiome, allowing the leaf litter and the organic matter to build the topsoil naturally over time. And then we have the ocean proximity, which really matters, like the air, the moisture, the salinity. It actually flavors our tea, right? And then we think of the soil as a living, holistic system that we're actually participating in. It's not a medium we're managing. So that's the big mindset shift, right? And then the biggest shift, I would say, is patience, where the soil health is measured for the long term, like decades, not like a year or like even seasons.
What evidence suggests regenerative systems remain productive over time?
So I would say the most accurate answer is time for me. So the first harvest from our trees took close to a decade because we planted by seed. But the trees are now more than like a quarter of a century old and they're producing. So we noticed that the younger bushes that were pushed hard early on, they often plateau or they decline. And that's where we learn, right? And then our trees are still deepening now. The yield per acre mat looks different when you're measuring like a long-term horizon, as I mentioned before, versus short-term. So the real evidence that I would point to is root depth, which I told you before, like 10, 20, 30 feet deep into the soil, depending on the duration. And then the soil biology, which points to the health of the soil microbiome and how life is coming from the soil and contributing to the tea crop, right? And then the consistency of the leaf quality year over year without the synthetic inputs that we talked about earlier. So our land is getting healthier. It's not depleting over time. And that is really the greatest evidence because you can see it, you can feel it, and you can taste it from year to year. And when we go into scientific evidence, there are wonderful organizations like the Rodale Institute. They're like the father of regenerative farming here in America. And they are doing tests all the time. They have an organic, they have a conventional, they have a regenerative organic farmland next to each other. And they're constantly doing tests over the long term. And so now that they've been doing it for many, many, many years, there's very robust scientific evidence that regenerative practices actually yield on par or more than conventional.
If regenerative agriculture expands, how might tea estates measure success differently?
So the metrics really have to expand, like the yield per acre and cost per kilo. These are real things, and estates, we can't ignore them, right? But we're measuring the wrong time window. That's the key point here. So soil carbon sequestration, we just talked about biodiversity indices, water retention, worker tenure and well-being, community health. Like we're looking at everything holistically here, right? So these are the lagging indicators of whether a farm system is building or extracting. Right? This is what we all have to consider. So the estates that will be viable in 30, 40, 50 years are the ones measuring what they're leaving behind, not just what they're taking out. And that's what we're talking about here, right? So a strong, like purpose-driven framework is actually built around this shift from extraction metrics, which is the majority, to stewardship metrics.
The future value of tea may depend not only on how much leaf is produced, but on the long-term health of the land producing it. Michael, thank you for joining us on the Tea Biz podcast.
Regenerative farming is what's going to save the tea industry because it's going to maintain and preserve the value of tea. And you talked about it earlier, but what follows with that economic viewpoint is farmer livelihood and the longevity of a tea estate. So to me, the best way holistically to really elevate our industry, to really elevate it and maintain the value of our precious Camellia sinensis plant that's been around for thousands of years, we have to focus on soil health, regenerative agriculture, come up with a higher quality crop that people will have a reason to value better, more.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of TBiz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the TBiz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.